off and running. They deferred to me to fix the technical problems, and that's the wrong guy to defer to. Hey everyone, welcome to Inside Curling. We've been doing this a while now. Today is no exception. It's our weekly show, the week of the Brier. It's the really the one I wanted to get to. One of my all-time favorites is when they were in Regina. We're going to talk about that today with our two World Curling Hall of Famers, Kevin Martin and, of course, Warren Hansen. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. And thanks a lot to all our sponsors, Jackpot City, who brings you what is happening around the curling world, Coyote Tractor, the sponsor of Hot Rock Topics, and Goldline, who brings you In the House, which is our guest spot, and we got a great guest coming up today. Paul Webster is going to join us, who was a development coach with Curling Canada for a long time, and now he's the coach of Team Botcher. Kev, why do teams need a coach?
Well, it's funny, Jimmy, quite a few years ago, but not a terribly long time ago, they didn't really have many coaches. I always did with Jules Ochar. Jules was always with us since a junior for me, for goodness sakes. But other than that, there weren't many coaches. But what it can bring to the, it can bring so much from a technical standpoint after the event. During the event, once you actually, you're on the ice and you're ready to go, I believe there's not a lot a coach can do other, you know, track the stones and keep the team from fighting. But other than that, there's not that much. But between events, man, there's so much work to be done analytically, technically, chemistry-wise, dynamics. My goodness. Yeah, there's tons of work to be done, and a coach can do a lot of it. And in Team Botcher's case, not carrying a fifth, all of that work that generally a fifth player would do falls onto the coach as well. So right. During an event like a Brier, it's a long event, and Paul will be busy, no question.
I thought, Warren, I would ask that question, why do you need a coach, before a coach actually came on the show?
Well, hey, that's a good one, Jim. So do you know who was the driving force behind bringing coaches into curling a long time ago?
No.
You're talking to him.
Oh, wow. That was my guess. And what happened?
Yeah. Oh, it was a war. Another war.
So we're going to bring on Paul, our coach for Team Botcher. Also, the Brier's underway, as we said. It's in Regina. We've got to catch up with everything going on there. Not as predictable, the start of it, as everyone thought. Also, the World Wheelchair Championship is taking place, and we'll see what the standings are at this point. Another event, the National Mixed Doubles, took place this past weekend in America, in the U.S., and also in Switzerland. And there were some familiar names who ended up on the podium. We heard from our young friend, Tyler Powell, who's a big fan of the show and very much involved in curling. There's an event in Calgary that he wants to tell us about. It's pretty cool. Sounds pretty cool. I had a look at it. Hot Rock Topics. During the Scotties and the Brier, a lot of discussion has been taking place regarding alternate players. This week at the Brier, some teams have won, some don't. We're going to take a look at the history and see what the boys thought about alternate players. Not only alternate players, what about dropping the fourth and going to three? We haven't heard from that in a while. Goldline Curling's Momentum shoes are unbelievably comfortable with a fast, reliable slider and a gripper that will keep you steady on the ice. Learn more at goldlinecurling.com. This is our guest spot. This is In the House. Our special guest, direct from the Brier, Team Botcher coach Paul Webster. We go back, Paul, to your days at Curling Canada, where you were a development coach, and now you're not. Welcome to the show. Come on in. Go ahead. You're already in. Don't bother knocking.
Is anyone here?
Yeah. How you doing?
Really good, guys. Thank you.
Walk us through that decision, Paul. Leaving Curling Canada and now coaching.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big one for sure. I came to Calgary in 2004 after a five-year stint as a high school teacher in Peterborough, Ontario. I just took a leave of absence there and did my master's in coaching at the U of C for a year, and then I was invited to be part of our coaching team at the 2006 Olympics in Torino, Italy. So that was way more attractive than a classroom. And so I've been coaching full time now since 2004. Beijing was to be my fifth Olympics with Curling Canada as our, that was my third as Olympic team leader. So I was always coaching in the background and helping guide that ship. And then, you know, I felt I was interested in doing having a change. I wasn't sure what that was. And then Benny came to me and suggested, listen, we got this team kind of quietly forming and we want to grab you and, you know, do a few things differently. And I thought it was a perfect opportunity to really focus on a lot of the stuff we wanted to focus on as an NSO anyway, and get these, get some of these teams practicing a little bit more and doing some of the right stuff. So, you know, this isn't a development team, that's for sure, with when you get Brendan Botcher, Mark Kennedy, Brett Gallant, and Ben Hebert. So even that in itself was a little intimidating, you know, so what could I bring to the table with that? So it was a really cool challenge, and it's been a lot of fun in the last 18 months working with these guys.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard the two words in the same sentence, Ben Hebert and quietly. I've never heard those two together. So what are you bringing, Paul? When you did get asked to do that's flattering. That's as you said, that's no small team. You must have been kind of nervous about it, you know, looking at this team and how you're going to coach them. How are you doing?
Well, I mean, number one, I have a great relationship with those guys. I've worked with all, and the one guy I didn't know that well was Brendan himself. Both Ben and Mark and Brett, I've worked with them and their teams technically. Brad would send Brett to Calgary during his tenure in Newfoundland when he was sort of broken. So he would show up at my doorstep in Calgary for a few days to get fixed. And so we've had a really good relationship. Benny, you know, the first international trip I took with Ben was when he's with Pat Simmons out of Saskatchewan in 2005. We were off to Kurosawa, Japan. And then one of the first teams I was ever coaching on the ice in Calgary was a young John Morris, and he had a third named Kevin Cooey. And then they brought up this upstart Mark Kennedy, and then Paul Moffat was their lead. It was one of the first teams I worked with on a regular basis up in Calgary. So those relationships go deep, and, you know, so they knew what I brought to the table from a, you know, technical curling side of things. And then a lot of it I find with our top men is just getting them talking and, you know, that accountability piece of what do we want to do and are we doing it? And then I find, you know, whether it's in curling or life, it's easy to forego those difficult conversations. And I think, you know, if I frustrate the guys these days, it would be ensuring we have those conversations on a regular basis and checking in and making sure they're looking their teammates in the eye and asking the right questions, but also having the right answers and being okay if they don't and explaining why.
I guess the early story of the Brier, and then we'll bring in Kevin, is Northwest Territories in Northern Ontario. They're not supposed to be doing what they're doing. You guys get sort of stung yesterday by Northern Ontario. How did you take the loss? What was the conversation after?
Well, interesting about taking a loss is you have to, right? So we took it. And you know, everyone played well. Brendan struggled with a couple of his final shots, and he missed his last draw. That's the business we're in, is that doesn't matter how well we're playing, you still have to make the last shot. And I think, you know, for the Brier, the storylines right now are great. And I don't want to forget PEI, too. They're at 3-1. So that setup of the Brier of being, you know, connection between the culture and history of the Brier and the territories and the top teams, the territories and provinces right now are showing that we still have to beat them. So we knew that coming in as the top seed only meant we had a great fall. It didn't mean they're just going to hand the trophy to us. So we came in here knowing we had to win a whole bunch of games and beat a whole bunch of teams, including Northern Ontario, and they beat us yesterday.
Yeah. Hey, Paul. Hey, thanks a lot for coming in and taking the time. I know you're busy with the coaching. One thing we talked about before we came on, we were talking about the sanding of the stones a couple of nights ago. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, because it seemed, I watched the first draw the next morning after, And it was pretty interesting, to say the least. I guess your thoughts on that and what the players have to do to be able to get ready for it? Because it's not easy the next morning.
No, I agree with you there, Kev. It's part of the game now. So Greg Owosco consistently gives us an unbelievable playing surface to go on. He doesn't like sanding the stones after Tuesday night. So it's probably the last, when I say probably, I believe it is the last time he'll do it, during this, event. So I think he started out with, 80 grit, and that just wasn't enough. So he did three passes on 60 and we went from edge of 8 foot, the day before to edge of 12 foot, that day. So I believe all the teams are looking for it. Like it makes for better TV. The missed shots don't make for better TV, but there's a learning curve there. You know what's going to happen. It's something we prepare for. It's just having the ability to throw a little bit more aggressively when that comes through and just map the ice. We knew going into yesterday, before we had to play Northern Ontario, the toughest part of that, we had first practice on that ice. And within the curling Canada World Curling, you have to dust up both sides. So we knew that was going to be the toughest part. And our pre-game draw for Hammer was unbelievable. So the guy, I think we're after 8 stones, so 4 games, I think we're 43 centimeters for those, on including that one. And the draw before was a little crazy with people trying to figure out the ice. So we had the advantage, we weren't the first game on, so we got to see it on TV. I slipped over to the arena just to see what it looked like. We just knew, and you know, it's kind of the ice we always say we want. So we've got to be able to perform on that.
Sure. You mentioned aggressive, have to throw it a little more aggressive. It's funny when we get in these discussions, technical discussions, then all of a sudden we get emails and texts going, what are you talking about? What does aggressive mean? So what does aggressive mean? What do you mean by being more aggressive?
It's a great question. I think the best thing, you know, we use in technical practice, we use lasers a lot. So if the viewer at home can imagine when someone's sliding out, there's a laser between the skip's broom and the middle of the thrower's rock. So as that person's throwing, the positive release or the aggressive throw, what you'll see at release is that they send that rock out off the line a little bit. So the laser's still on the rock, but it's just not on the middle of the rock anymore. So it's, you know, I relate it to a professional golfer drawing and fading the ball. We do it on purpose. Some club curlers do it by mistake. But it's that idea. So we just increase the amount of, we on our team, we call it a set. So we just increase the amount of set that we do on those days. And, we found some pretty unique ways of practicing these days to ensure that we have the same language and same technical ability to throw it identically. So, you know, we're constantly striving for just that collective consistency in throws so we can follow each other. So, yeah, so we just increased the set yesterday and the boys played really well.
Hey, and when it comes to practice, you practice, I guess I would say your team mostly at the Glencoe, I assume. Would your ice maker actually make a little different sheet, sometimes more curl, sometimes a little less, depending on, so you can prepare yourself for a morning when all of a sudden the rocks are sanded, and then all of a sudden you've had that practice, you've had to, you know, had to deal with that on your practice ice. Is that something you deal with the reason I ask is we talked to Silvana Terenzoni a while ago, and their ice maker tends to do that for them in Switzerland, make a different sheet depending on where they're going.
Yeah, we're lucky at the Glencoe Club in Calgary. Our head ice maker, Mark Jaworski, is a self-taught ice maker. He's been there for 41 years. Super open to having other guys come in and show them what they're up to. I'd love to say that he makes up a sheet just for us, but he makes up all the sheets like that. So our members, when I first got there 13 years ago, I asked Mark first day, like, hey, do we sandpaper the rocks? He's like, no, we don't. And I said, well, I've only got a short time here where I've got, the belief in ignorance. And so I think we should. And he had never sandpaper rocks before. And we joke about it. We call that 100%. And that was when Johnny and Benny were still playing with you. And they came in the first day and I said, $100, you can't hit the pin. And whatever we did, I don't know if it was an angle grinder or, or 20 grit, but it was curling off the sheet. So we dragged those rocks for weeks and got them a little straighter. And then, but you know, we've had Mark Shurkin, Greg Owasco come in to work. Greg came in during the Scotties just to walk him through how he's going to paper the rocks for the briar. So we papered our rocks identically to start, but then we just do all 8 sheets. Like my members now, Kev, it gets to the point now, if we get inside the 8 foot to draw the button, I'll have an email or a quiet conversation where, you know, one of the guys like, listen, like I don't want to complain, but it's getting really straight. And I'm like, I love that. Right. Cause you know, there's certain clubs where we have to strive for and hope a lot that we're going to get a good practice sheet. And it's frustrating that the guys have to go around to search for those sheets. We're lucky at the Glencoe when our ice is bad, it's still pretty B+. And Mark's really open to, you know, sanding the rocks to give us that ability to get ready for big events. And then the members would just know that they're probably taking middle 12 to outside of 12 in the way they throw it, because they're not throwing with a lot of set. So if we think we've got a lot of curl, they've got more. And it's fun to watch our club championships. They've learned a lot and make a ton of shots on that ice.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. Let's keep on this rock thing for a minute, because yesterday I saw two very uncharacteristic things happen. First with Brad Gushue, where he's drawing against two and the rock didn't really seem to make it to the hog line. And then last night with Brendan, he had just thrown that shot to the 4 foot, and I don't think it was anywhere near close. So was it a result of those rocks being sanded that caused that to happen? Or what do you think took place in both cases?
I think both those skips came out light. Yeah, I would love to blame it on the rock. You know, it's refreshing with Brendan. He's not one of those skips that's going to look around. We joke in practice. You won't see the guys. You might see them on TV now, you know, like if there's a missed shot. We joke at one point, all 4 guys have to point at someone, right? And then when you on those days when you're like, okay, the shot was missed and I don't know who to point at, you might be pointing it at yourself. And Brendan's the first. He's not one of those skips who's going to look for the, you know, all the myriad of possibilities of why he missed. And he just I came out light there. He felt he actually came out a little stronger on the slide, and then was a little concerned about how much release. So if we don't release it the way we want to in that last couple of feet, it's not going to travel the same. Especially with aggressive rocks, we probably, you know, and getting into a little bit of the discussion, we probably could have got away with that throw the day before when the rocks weren't sanded. But once they're sanded, that ability to make sure you have a positive release and follow through with that release, it impacts. It's amazing how much of an impact it has in that first 30 or 40 feet of travel. And again, you'd almost have to watch a video with a laser to believe it. And just that last 3 feet coming out of your hand just ensures that leg push. So triple threat, as we call it, of line, weight, and release is super important for every shot.
So you guys have 4 games left. You're playing very well. I think your average yesterday was about 89% as a team, which is outstanding. I think 2 of the guys in the middle of the team were in the high 90s. So you have Dunstan and Crothers left to play, which are 2 of the big dogs, but you have Grattan and Snyder as well, BC and New Brunswick. How do you look at these games going forward now? I have to look at this question of, you're playing these top teams, how do you get up for them? But now you're playing Grattan and you're playing Snyder, teams you would expect to normally win against. However, with what's been going on at this Briar, how do you approach all this?
Very much the same. Like, you know, we don't, you've had Renee Sonnenberg on your podcast talking about analytics, and we steer that ship a little bit before the event, after event. We'll check in midway, but a lot of it, you know, as simple as it is, we're trying to make 8 shots in a row, and that ability to caddy each other and make sure that, you know, if I'm playing well, if I'm not playing well, that I feed it up the lineup to ensure the next guy gets the same information. So we're trying to make 8 shots. So we, again, getting hammers big for our team. We didn't do a great job of that in some of the slams. So we worked on that. Right now we're leading the hammer race. That gives a little bit of a, you know, a couple extra feathers in the tail for the boys when they start the game. And then I would love to say, we don't take these guys for granted. I mean, they're all here. You know, if you think James Grattan can't get up for a Briar game, and make some shots, you know, you shouldn't be playing at the Briar. We want to do all the things. We want to grab hammer. We want to dictate the game. We want to score deuces. We want to blank ends when it's appropriate. So we just know, you know, when you're looking at, you mentioned Crothers and Dunstone, the ability to have a miss is just way less appropriate in those games. You just, there's less room for error. And some of these teams that aren't playing all the time, there are more misses. You saw with Team Ontario last night, though, they gave us some misses. We didn't give them any misses until a couple important shots, and they took advantage of it. You know, Trevor played a great game and definitely earned that win for his team.
So let's talk about something unrelated that we're going to talk about later in the show. That's the alternate player. You guys don't have an alternate player, I do not believe. What's the situation with your team and the philosophy of not having an alternate?
Our biggest thing is, Warren, is just the chemistry too. So, you know, the Briars part of our long, you know, long-term goals and stuff. But we're looking towards the Olympics in 2026. And it's an interesting question to bring someone into that mix just for one event. If there's a really good player out there, we would definitely grab them and have them here. We're more concerned about the impact of the team chemistry and you know, the locker room is not one we're worried about in Canadian curling, because we're sharing locker rooms with a whole bunch of other teams. But in this venue, so we always get a team room for team meetings, cards, dinner table, around the dinner table, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that unknown of the fifth player is super important. We will be taking if we're lucky enough to represent Canada internationally, we'll grab a fifth player off of one of the top teams. Because we don't want to get stuck with a three-man lineup in international play. But here, if one of the guys went down, I would say we'd be stronger playing with three right now than trying to integrate a fourth player if you're going to try to win. And honestly, if we, one of our guys goes down, the chances of us winning the Briar have definitely went down as well. So it's a tricky one. I know the three player question, you know, there are a lot of teams out there that would be stronger with three players. You know, watching Howard's team win Ontario, they looked really good. And, you know, Tim March is a beast and sweeps on both sides. And with arguably just needing one sweeper these days anyway, it's an interesting conundrum for teams to go to, whether you have to start every game with four, or I don't know what the answer is going to be, but we won't be taking a fifth to a Briar in the near future unless we find a really good fit.
Paul Webster has been our guest, and he is the coach of Team Botcher. I can't think of a tougher team to coach when you have two guys who are at polar opposites in Brendan and Ben Hebert.
I'm going to jump in there. I want to jump in there, Jimmy. You guys throw Benny under the bus all the time. I actually think the two guys that see eye to eye, Brendan does a great impression of Brendan Botcher on TV. But man, him and Benny can go at it in our team meetings and so on. And in just a funny way, he's honestly probably the funniest guy on our team in just a quiet way. So, and Benny, for all his, I think, what Benny brings to our table and what he brings to Brendan is just a really good teammate that will honestly go to war for you. So,
right.
I'm going to stick up for my buddy Ben here for a second.
Well, he's a good target.
Yeah. The reason I bring it up is I've been a good target my whole life. So, Paul Webster, good luck the rest of the week, man. We'll be watching. You got a big game tonight against Dunstone, so we'll be tuning in. And you guys are poised. You guys are poised. And Alberta, Kev, you going to show your hand? Yeah, I'm sure. Take it easy, Paul.
Yeah, you betcha.
Paul Webster, immediately, Kevin, coming to Ben Hebert's defense.
We have to have fun with Benny. That's important. That's all there is. You know, I was looking at their team stats, and they're having Ben throw almost the same amount of interns as outturns. Unbelievable. So I wanted to get into that with Paul too, but anyway, all good fun.
Right. Warren, he sounds like the right sort of guy to be a coach.
Well, Paul's been involved for a long time, and he's a student of the game and knows a whole pile of stuff in depth. So yeah, he's a good coach.
Kevin, can you quickly explain again? I didn't understand how the lasers work, what he's talking about.
Yeah, so we used them a lot as well. If you just have a laser at the other end, pretending it's the broom, and it's shining all the way down the sheet, right into the dead center of the curling stone.
Okay.
While you're in the hack. The idea being that you want to come out exactly down that laser. And then on release, if the ice is curling a ton or a little straight, the amount you set it as to how will the rock stay exactly on the laser? Will it go as if it's falling a little bit because you set it back? Or if the ice is really, really straight, you might even soft it a little, meaning it'll go the other way a touch, which is very uncommon these days. Generally have lots of curl. But that's what, yeah, lasers are very good to work with, actually. But the key at a intermediate kind of level, it's wanting, you want the rock to go down the laser, straight to the broom from the hack. Yep.
You're still on, Kev. Give us what you think is going on so far. Couple of surprises. What's happening at the Brier?
Yeah, well, pool. Let's start with Pool A. And you know what? The Brier, it looks great. Looks like a lot of fun. I'm seeing some good fun at the patch, which, if you remember, Jimmy, the 06 Brier was chaos at the patch.
Right.
I think, Warren, wasn't it a crazy number, like 6,000 or 7,000 people?
Actually, it was a couple of times about 8,000 when we had Blue Rodeo in there in the first night, but that was in the indoor soccer field, so it was 100,000 square foot space.
Right.
So it was a big
hole.
But
you need some space, 8,000 people. Anyways, I'm sure it's a lot of fun. The Briers and curling events in general, I shouldn't just say Brier, that's not fair. Curling events in general when they're in Regina are fun. Anyway, okay, so Pool A. Carruthers, Botcher, and Dunstone near the top. Trevor Bonneau, though, out of Northern Ontario, is putting on a show at 3-1. Just beat Botcher last night as we're taping today on Tuesday. I get to see Trevor almost every year. He's always a big supporter of the Lupus event that we talked about on our last show, Jim.
Right.
And he's a big supporter. So we get to see each other, and he's a great guy. But curling, fantastic. So he's a bit of a surprise in that pool. But everything else is pretty much falling into place in that one. But Pool B is crazy. At the top, Northwest Territories. At the top of a pool at the Brier, Jamie Cooey playing fantastic. Glenn Kennedy, so Mark's brother,
yes,
is a really good curler, but he's a really super busy guy. He's with business and stuff. So he just hasn't had the chance to play like Mark does all the time.
Right.
But a really good curler, and he is making everything also. So they're at the top right now in Pool B. You've got McEwen, no surprise. But then you've got PEI, Smith.
Right.
Who? Right? Smith out of PEI at 3-1, tied for second. And then you've got Guju after that in fourth place. So not that's not a big surprise. But having Cooey and PEI in the top four is. Quebec's not far off. And Sluchinski not far off. Mm-hmm. They're both doing okay. But and then you got Alberta Team Cooey not playing well at all. That's Kevin Cooey. Not his brother, Jamie. Kevin and company are at 1-4, Jim, which is shocking.
Whoops.
Yeah, it's a real whoops. They're in eighth place. They're only ahead of Nunavut. So they've really got to pull their socks up. But the funny thing is, with this pool play and who's beat who, I studied it closely last night. 4-4, like happened in the Scotties. Remember Caitlin Laws got in by her draw the button?
Yep.
Has a legit shot of actually getting in this pool. Pool B, 4-4. Has a legit shot, depending on your draw of the button.
Yeah. The other surprise, Kevin, is Guju in fourth place.
Yeah, not firing on all cylinders, but still 3-2 and looking pretty good, I think, to make the playoffs still. But you're right, not playing, you know, on. The ice looks tough, though, to be honest, with watching a lot of the games. It does look tough. Team Botcher would argue that because they're cruising along in the high 80s, low 90s. So they would say, nah, it's easy. But, you know, watching, there's quite a few misses going on the ice. So it's a little bit tough. And I think that kind of says a lot. But I think the top teams will figure the ice out in the second half of the round robin.
Yeah. If there's one thing about top teams, they're good adjusters all the time.
Uh-huh. They are, you know, and it doesn't matter what sport it is. You know, they might struggle a little at the start if conditions are tough. Golf, if it's real windy and raining. But right. At the end of the day, usually the top teams will figure it out. But we'll see. We'll see. Pool A is going pretty much normal. Pool B is crazy. Love it.
Yeah. Warren?
Oh, an interesting Breyer so far, for sure. I've been chuckling to myself here the last day or so of thinking some people at Curling Canada must be taking some deep breaths because, you know, this kind of a game of Russian roulette they play where their top athletes, the A-carded ones, the six top teams that are funded through Sport Canada on the podium and the Canadian Olympic Committee, are certainly the ones that they expect one of them to represent Canada at the Worlds. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's always the danger of some of these teams that aren't even ranked are going to get hot and they could come through. So right now, as we're sitting here on, this is Tuesday, that's starting to happen. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here the next couple of days. But again, if we look back again, like Kevin said, Pool A, Cooey at the top, but it's the different Cooey, Jamie.
Right.
And he's playing lights out. He's at 4-1. He's got a fairly difficult road ahead of him, but not an impossible one because he's only got 3 games left. He's got to play Saskatchewan. That's going to be a tough one. He has to play Alberta Slalinski, another game that could be a tough one as well, but maybe of the three here, PEI is the other one. Maybe Shalinsky will be the easier one. I don't know. So he's got to win those three to end up with a basically one loss for the round robin. So it's certainly doable, and he could get there. And again, as Kevin mentioned, Glenn Kennedy playing really well. And if we go over on the other side of the coin and we look at Pool B, and we look at, again, Trevor Bonneau, it's again a third player, Mike McCarville, Krista McCarville's husband, playing third in that team is another guy that's shooting the lights out. And those two thirds right now, Kennedy with territories and McCarville with Bonneau, are certainly, I think, a key to why those teams are sitting where they are. And for what I've seen so far, if those guys keep playing the way they are, they're going to be close. So the next couple of days will be pretty exciting. Like Kevin says, I think Pool A is a little cleaner at this stage of the game than Pool B. I'm looking at Pool A and probably, oh, it's Crothers, Manitoba, Northern Ontario, Botcher, Alberta, Dunstan, Manitoba, that probably still have the best shot there. But over in the Pool B one, right now I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams who very much still have a shot. And interesting, as Kevin says, Kevin Cooey is not one of them.
Before we do our picks, Warren, what's the playoff format again? Remind everyone what happens. You got the two pools, then what?
Oh, you want to make my life really difficult this morning, eh? Well, top three teams from each pool advance, so there's 6 teams advance. In the first round of playoffs, team one from A plays team two of B and vice versa, with the winner advancing to the page 1 versus 2. The two bottom teams, the third place teams, play, and the winners will go against the losers from the 1 versus 2. So
I knew that. Same as the Scotties. Okay, how are we doing our picks, Warren?
Well, we're still hanging in there. Jim, you've got Botcher, Gushu, McEwen, Dunstan, Howard, and Cooey. So 5 of the 6 are still very much in the hunt. Kevin has Gushu, Selensky, Dunstan, Botcher, Crothers, and Cooey. Same thing. 5 still very much in the hunt. And I have Dunstan, Crothers, Botcher, Selensky, Gushu, and Cooey. Again, I've got 5 as well. So Kevin Cooey is the one that we all picked that just has not had a good week. Right from the word go. You know, I watched him the first day, and he was throwing draws through the house. And I'm going, whoo, what's going on with Kevin Cooey? So he's just off a bit, and they're just not doing well.
Well, the funny thing is, Warren, when you look at his personal stats, his intern, I don't know the exact number. Let's say it's 70% on his intern. His outturn, when I looked, is at 48%. Wow. Kevin Cooey's outturn. Doesn't make sense. So, you know, they might want to look, you got to look deeper into that because it makes no sense. Kevin Cooey's outturn is his money shot, and it's really struggling. So you might want to look at maybe go a little deeper into sweeping or something, and haven't had a chance to talk to Carrick. I don't think he wants to talk to me right now.
That's a good lot to say. How's the weather?
Right, yeah. He's got that Martin blood. I don't have the nerve to phone him right now.
Kev, are the good teams playing bad, or are the, I don't want to call them bad teams, or are the less predictable teams playing well?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it goes down to right now, the conditions look a little tricky, no question. And right now, the so-called, the top ranked, let's say that, the top ranked teams are having a little bit of trouble. Now, that's not really the case with Team Botcher. They lost a bad one, Steel, to lose to Trevor Bonneau last night. But other than that, they are looking really, really good, Jim. But yeah, some of the teams are struggling that you wouldn't think would be. But we're only halfway through the round robin. It'll be interesting to see as things settle out here a little bit where the teams end up. Because it matters in round robin too, Jim, who you play first.
Right.
It's not always easy to figure that out, because a lot of people's first part of the round robin will be really tough. And then the second half, you get the easier teams, so-called easier teams. Or it's vice versa, right? So that makes a big difference too in round robins.
War in the World Wheelchair Championships is taking place in Korea. Give us a quick update there.
Okay, so actually yesterday Canada was looking pretty good, and I got up this morning and pulled up the results from what took place overnight, and a little tougher today. They were sitting solidly in fourth spot at 4-1 yesterday, but they dropped two games overnight, and they're now sitting at 4-3. So here's the standings at the moment. This is a 12-team round robin with the customary WCF playoff, with the top six teams heading into the showdown. It'll start next weekend. Here's where they currently sit. First place is Latvia at 6-1. China is at 5-2, as is Korea. And then Canada is at now 4-3 with four other nations, Italy, Norway, and Sweden. So they're in there tough with, again, a couple of days or so left in the round robin before the playoffs start next weekend. But they're going to have to get things going a little better if they're going to be in that playoff round next weekend, because, again, it's six teams that will advance. And with three losses already, they probably really can't afford another one. The Canadian team has Mark Iderson skipping, but he throws lead stones. The person throwing fourth stones is John Thurston. Ina Forrest throws third, and Gil Dash second. And we'd like to wish them all the best of luck in the remaining games they have left in Korea.
Kev, what update do you have for us in Switzerland for the national mixed doubles there and also the U.S.?
Well, yeah, there's lots going on here. So let's do Switzerland first. A couple of unknown curlers, Breyer and Yannick Schwaller.
Never heard of them.
They've obviously a tremendous couple of curlers. They ended up beating Pablo Lachat, that fantastic sweeper, along with Kara Hovold off of Team Terenzoni in the final 8-3. So congratulations to Breyer and Yannick with their win in Switzerland. U.S. The Corey Dropkin and Corey TC, the current mixed doubles world champions, were in the final in the U.S., Jimmy. But Matt and Becca Hamilton beat them 7-6. Ooh. So congratulations to the Hamiltons. Yeah, they're off to the world championships, winning that one 7-6, which they were at the Olympics, right? So you can't say that it's kind of an upset, but you got to think it's an upset. Corey and Corey in mixed doubles are really, really good. And the Hamiltons, they upset them, and good for them, and congratulations.
Right, I mean, the Hamiltons have been there before. They were in the Olympics in 2018, and I think they won one other U.S. championship as well. So they're good. But as you said, Corey and Corey are, I thought, the best in the world, but they didn't do it.
Our young friend Tyler Powell, he sent us a note. He's involved in a fundraiser. Hey, Jimmy. Love listening to the show. Haven't missed one yet. I continue to learn so much. You see, Warren, I'm teaching people. Fundraiser going on in Calgary. I want to let you know about it. It starts in April. I'm working with the Canadian Sport Institute, Calgary, to run Curl with a Rock Jock. Curl with a Rock Jock is the annual fundraiser for the Canadian Sport Institute in Calgary. The event features 24 Paralympians and Olympians from many sports, 8 celebrity curlers like John Morris and Jocelyn Peterman, and 24 corporate teams. The event is taking place at the Calgary Curling Club April 4th from 9 till 3. Everyone is welcome to attend. For more information, get a hold of Tyler, 250-270-0178. Okay, Tyler, good luck with that. As you know, at the start of the Scotties, Breann Harris from Kerry Anderson's team was deemed ineligible. A lot of people want an update on it. We don't know one yet. We don't know, but as soon as we do, we'll let you know. Modern Off Topics is brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, the UTVs, ZTRs, and compact construction equipment to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. I am a hot rock topic? Holy man. Jim, Kevin, Warren, can you please explain the black 12-foot rings at the Briar? They are butt ugly, and can you please do something about it? Turn Jim loose at Montana's. Better yet, drop him off at your closest franchise and leave him there with a ransom note. No one will pick him up until the rings are blue again. Great show. Great info for us curling fans. Thank you. I'll be listening. That's from Jim Sloan. Who knows about this, Kevin? Why? I've never, you know, that's true.
Well, there's actually quite a bit of work goes into the circles and exactly how the sponsor wants them to look and everything else. So, one thing about Jim, Jim Sloan, we know how he feels. I watched a lot of the games and that didn't occur. That wasn't the first thing I thought, was that, geez, those rings look terrible. I didn't really notice them looking that bad. But that is a decision made by sponsors. That's not a decision just haphazardly made. That goes through an advertising agency and a design company to figure that out.
And we've seen a lot of variations in what's being done with the rings in the last few years. Some of them are pretty creative and artistic. Maybe in some cases I thought they've gone a little too far. But it's just spicing up the game a little more and trying to put a little more interest in it. As Kevin says, try to make sure the sponsor who is on the title gets what they want out of it. And in this case, Montana seems to have gone with the color black, so they wanted those rings to be black. So,
what about the logos, Kev, on the jackets of each team? Do you think they're big enough?
Well, I'm not sure the province is big enough on the Jesus. Front of the jacket. That was one thing that you couldn't help but notice going, wow, those are some big letters. But you know what? The fit and the look of the uniforms this year have been pretty good, I think. The only questionable thing was the front of the jacket, in my opinion, but I'm no artistic type person.
What I find interesting is this signal now is going into the United States to a lot of people. And I'm sure there's a whole pile of fans from other parts of the world are going, what the hell does NB mean? Where is that?
There would be Canadian kids who wouldn't know what NB means, Warren. Never mind Americans. There you go. That's Hot Rock Topics. What are you hearing? Here's what we're hearing. There's been a lot of chatter the past couple of weeks about alternate players. You heard us speak to our guest about it. Should teams have them? Shouldn't they have them? What's the deal? A number of teams at the Briar have an alternate player, but most don't. Warren, what's this all about? Maybe a bit of a history of it.
It does have quite a history if we start to look at it. I mean, from the game's point of view, it's always been considered to be a four-person game. But if you go back to the days of McDonald Tobacco and the Briar in their days, which they were the sponsor for 50 years and they ran it, they had very strict rules. If you lost a player after you had won a zone playdown in your own city and you had to replace somebody, the only way you could do it was to take somebody from that club that you were playing out of who had never entered playdowns, that they could be brought in as a substitute at lead. So if you lost a player somewhere between winning a zone and getting to the Briar, you were screwed, quite frankly. And that stuck there with McDonald's for until they were gone. And I mean, if you did have to play with three players as well, the first player had to throw four rocks. And they had a goofy rule there as well. You could bring in a sweeper. So if you were playing the Briar in Edmonton and Ontario lost their second player in the second draw, they then had to play with three players for the balance, with the first player throwing four rocks. But a sweeper from Edmonton could be brought in and could sweep every rock for the rest of the event. Once the McDonald's were gone, Labatt came in, pressure from the provincial associations and things started to change a bit. And initially what happened, there was a pool put together in each center where the Briar was being held with about six players in that pool. And if a team lost a player, they could take somebody out of that pool or play with three, but they couldn't have a sweeper. So that went on for 2-3 years. And finally, I was part of the movement back in about 1984 by my memory, that actually got the sponsor to the point where they would pay for an alternate player, because it became to the point of the Briar very significant event with a lot of attention on television and everything else, that it just wasn't right to have a team from Alberta having a lead from Quebec if they were playing in Montreal, coming in the second draw and playing the rest of the event. It made no sense, and they didn't have the uniform. So we're bringing in the alternate that was then being paid by the sponsor. There was now somebody on the team with a uniform that was actually part of that team from day one. But it never really caught on. And in many cases, the teams would appoint a friend as that alternate player. They were reluctant to use them in many cases and would often go with three until finally a rule was brought in that if you lost a player, you had to use the alternate. So it's always been a foggy issue as to how does this player fit in. Some teams, again, did it properly. They did bring in a proper fifth player and utilize them a bit, but it never really was a thing that was bought into. And finally, about 2016, 2017, there was a point in time that Curling Canada or the sponsor paid for six people, four players, an alternate, and a coach. But in about 2017, they changed the whole thing again and said, we're going to play for five people. You can have a player, alternate player or a coach, but you can't have both. Well, you can have both, but you have to pay for one of them. So that's the way it is today. They are paying for five people. If you want a coach and an alternate, you have to pay for one of them. They won't pay for both. Where does this go? I don't know. I mean, we've talked about this, and I guess we have to decide what is curling. At the top level, that is the Brier, the Scotties, the World Championships, the Grand Slams. What do we want as the appearance? Do we want teams to be out there playing with three people? Do we want to have a fifth player that is there and is part of that team and has to be used? But it becomes an issue of economics and team dynamics as to how do you make all that work? Maybe what has to happen is the Canadian, or the Curling Canada, the World Federation, the Grand Slam, if alternate players are going to become a structured part of the team, is maybe they have to be paid for so that it's not a financial burden on the team. And the other thing, if there's prize money involved, if there's an alternate player, maybe the prize money has to be increased by that number so everybody's getting the same amount, but you don't get it unless there's five players. I don't know. It's an issue that needs to be dealt with one way or the other, and I think it needs to be discussed. But Kevin, what's your views on it all? How do you think it should shape up going forward?
I think it's a fundamental question for the game. Is it a four-person game or not? That's what the World Curling Federation has to decide. As far as paying for people or not, I don't think you want that in the Grand Slam. Grand Slam needs to be increase the purse and have it the market decide as far as are you going to bring a coach or not? Are you going to bring a fifth or not? But if you go down, you play four players and you lose one and you have to have four on the ice, then you're risking actually getting booted out of the event if you don't have your four players. So it'll be interesting to see this discussion is happening at the World Curling Federation now. So it's not being ignored. Does a curling team have to have four players? That's what they need to decide, and then they have to stick to it. Well, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it can go three. But you may actually see players or teams deciding, you know what? We have just as good a chance of winning with three. Let's split the pot up three ways.
That's the other thing that I've thought of. You determine that curling is either a three-person game or a four-person game at your discretion. Because the other goofy rule used to exist there, if you wanted to play with three players, you had to start the competition with four. So somebody had to come out and throw one rock, and then you could go with three. Now, that's been taken away, but maybe that's the answer. You can either make it a three-person game or a four-person game. Maybe that's the way it goes.
Don't be so cheap, Curling Canada. Pay for the alternate and the coach. Jesus.
Well, they did for years.
There we go. There's another big show in the books. You've been listening to Inside Curling. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you to our sponsors. We couldn't do it without them. Drop us an email. Maybe I'll run into you out of Montana's with a ransom note stapled to my forehead. Yeah. Thanks a lot to Rod Paulson. He handles all our social media. His company's called In-House Strategies. Check it out. Email us, insidecurling@gmail.com. That's insidecurling@gmail.com. Again, thanks to Jackpot City, Coyote, and Goldline, who make all of this possible and allow us to bring it to you each and every day. Warren, we're Brier Week. When are we back on?
Thursday night, Jim, and Friday night.
Thursday and Friday, right on. I love what you said, Warren. I could see Curling Canada waking up this morning and reading emails where people are going, NWT and PEI in the final, Kev. That would be great. And CCA's going, no, it wouldn't. Yeah. No, it wouldn't.
there'd be a phone call on Monday morning from Ottawa.
anyway, I'll tell you what. If it went the other way, it makes the beginning of the Brier interesting. You know, because a lot of people don't tune in until sort of Tuesday or Wednesday. So Jamie Coos at 3-1. Northern Ontario's
4-1. Yeah.
They both have one. I think both have one loss.
Yeah, they're both 3-1. You're right, Jim. Hey, you've been paying attention, Jim.
I want to change my Kevin Cooey pick to PEI, if that's all right. I'd like to do that. Take it easy, boys. Enjoy the Brier. We'll talk to you in a couple of days. Go Northwest Territories. Woo! See you, Kevin Steelworth.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jimmy.